Hey, contractors, have you ever wished you could predict the future within your business? Well, I can't teach you to become a fortune teller, but learning how to make an annual strategic plan is the next best thing. In this free strategic planning web class, you're going to learn how to predict cash flow issues before they actually happen, and how to tell who you actually need to hire before you need them, and how to put all of this down on a proven template used by over 1,900 contractors every single year. If 2025 felt kind of out of control for you, well, this is your chance to make 2026 a much smoother ride. So register in the link in the description before space runs out, and I'll see you there. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. What if I told you that the labor shortage was your fault? Yes, there's demographic changes and the economy plays a bit of a role, but our industry has really missed the mark when it comes to attracting the next generation. Today's guest is the one and only Aaron Witt, founder of BuildWit and the host of Dirt Talks podcast. He's on a mission to empower the next generation of tradespeople to bridge the gap between the old guard and the next wave of talent. In this episode, you're going to learn why the construction industry is partially at fault for the lack of new skilled labor, and the employer branding mistakes that you're definitely making and what to actually do about it, and the different generational gaps that exist and how we can solve this as one workforce. If you care about the future of your team, your business, and the trade as a whole, then this one's for you. Now let's get into it with Aaron Witt. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Mr. Aaron Witt, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
I've looked into you. You've become quite an influencer in the dirt world. Curious, how did you even get into this space? This is it's pretty big, massive, but I'd say relatively unknown space when it comes to these huge construction projects going on all over North America. How did you start in this?
Dumb luck. I grew up the son of a lawyer in Scottsdale, Arizona, very far from anything construction related. When I was a senior in high school, I was thinking about what to do with my life. My parents gave me the gift of a blank slate so I could just go in any direction. And as I was considering what to do with my life, a construction project popped up in my neighborhood. It was a big, drainage project, big 90 ton excavator, putting concrete pipe in the ground. It was just spectacular. So I'd watch it after school every day, just glued to what the heck was going on, and figured, hey, what if I just called the company and asked for a job? Because then I would be around this project, these machines all day, and I'd get paid for it. So how good is that? So graduated high school, asked the company for a job. Their owner said, sure, kid, come on down. We'll give you a shot as a laborer. Started out in construction. And from that summer on, just fell in love with it. So there was no doubt after that construction was for me. Then it was a matter of just finding out where in construction was for me. The owner of that company, he was the only guy in construction I knew. So I asked him, you know, how do I figure this out? And he said, just go try a bunch of stuff. I signed up for engineering school and tried a bunch of stuff, worked for five different civil construction companies doing all sorts of stuff in a few different states, ended up in road construction in Texas after graduating college, getting an engineering degree. And at that point, started to learn about personal brand, storytelling online, social media. There was a guy, Andy Frisella. He was talking all about brand. I was listening to his podcast at the time while I was in the industry. And I thought, man, this is a pretty good concept. Maybe I need to build my brand, but what should my brand be? And I started to go down the list of, like, you know, it could be hiking. But it's like, well, there's already a million people doing hiking and they're way better at that than I am. So then, you know, number two is construction. That was my professional life. I went online. There wasn't a whole lot to be seen about construction, machines, earth moving, what I enjoyed. So I thought, why don't I do this? And I started to do it really just as a means to get further career prospects down the road, build my brand so that companies would recognize me and I could get different jobs here or there and navigate my career a little bit more effectively. But it just, since no one was really doing it all that well at the time, that was early to the scene, but perfect timing, it really started to grow. So that was then 2018, quit my job to start BuildWit officially to tell stories about the dirt world. And 126, here we are.
Cool. It's when you think about like brand, you think about Apple, you think about Google, you think about large, usually tech organizations. When did brands start to become important for the construction space? Because I feel like it's for a long time, I don't even think it was a conversation anyone had. I think it was just, yeah, we run a construction business. Do you want to work with us? Like, when did that start to enter the scene? And how's that changed over the last couple of years?
It's been driven. I think brands always played a role. Like there are some dominant brands in the construction industry, but I think it's really started to take off with projects no longer being low bid, but being based on qualifications and reputation oftentimes now, especially even in the public sector and then workforce. Okay, maybe we're a public bid contractor. We've never had to worry about our brand at all because that's not how we get work. But now we need workforce. We're struggling. We've got our older guys timing out. They're retiring and we've got to attract this next generation, but they're not there because we haven't told anybody we exist. So we've got to start investing further in our brand. Construction's definitely been a laggard from a brand standpoint, but you can see it. It's dramatically changed even in the past 5 years. It's only more and more important, especially from a workforce standpoint.
I'm watching it. I'm watching it all the time because we're competing against everybody else in the industry and there's just not enough young people interested in this space. So you built something called BuildWit. Now explain what that is. What is the problem it's trying to solve for this industry and how did you come to make it basically, essentially?
It's always been about making the dirt world a better place, building the dirt world's next generation. When we say dirt world, that's critical infrastructure, natural resources, primarily civil construction contractors. So those building roads, laying pipe, putting asphalt on the ground, pouring concrete, etc. That's the world we live in. When I started, the business was a marketing company for construction companies to elevate their brand, to tell their story for the sake of recruitment. It's changed since. Nowadays, it's primarily a software company focused on training and development, building people that are new to the industry, giving them very basic skills, and then building leadership. That people new to leadership, they don't have that skill set, trying to give them that skill set and help them become just better people overall so they can be more effective for themselves, their teams, their companies. So it's changed a lot since I started it, from storytelling to now software and our leadership event. But the purpose of it has been the same since the beginning. It's we've got to help build the dirt world's next generation. It's not going to come from a contractor. It's not going to come from a major existing brand. It's got to be somebody else. And we think it's us.
When your entire contracting business is full of fires, which one do you put out first? This quiz will give you the answer, plus a step-by-step guide to actually get it done. Just take 5 minutes to answer some questions about your business, your leadership style, and your habits. Then you're going to get instant access to a personalized guide with recommendations based on our analysis of over 1,900 rapid growth contractors. You're going to learn which of the four phases of contractor growth you're actually in. Is it operator, manager, leader, or strategist? How your business stacks up in six core areas compared to industry benchmarks, and what to actually go do next, including customized resources, tools, and templates you'll have access to right away. No waiting around for some email or filling out a million separate forms. If you've got big goals, but no real plan to actually get there, take 5 minutes to fill this quiz out. It'll be the quickest and highest impact thing that you'll do for your business all day, I promise. The link is in the description, so go check it out. Now, back to the episode. So of all the companies you work with, and I imagine over the years of doing this, like what are the patterns that are going on that are just causing us to miss on our ability to find and attract good young people? Because it seems like a problem that's only getting worse with time. And it's maybe because the industry is getting busier and busier. But what are you seeing with all your clients, with all the members, with all the users that are on your software? What's happening? Why are we screwing this up so often?
I'm in a unique position. I get to see more of the construction industry than most people. I travel full time. I go to 30 plus US states every year. I go worldwide now. I've been to just this year, Europe, Canada, Japan, Australia, multiple times, Indonesia. I get to see a huge cross section of the industry. And when it comes to recruitment, you can see all the ads and the rhetoric that's all about how great the trades are, how good construction is. Oh, you get to build stuff and you get to work around cool stuff and pride in work. And oh, you get to make so much money. You don't need to go to college. You can make so much money here. And a lot of that is true. And contractors right now are making more money than ever. The people building the work aren't, but contractors are. And so the industry has more work than ever before, yeah. ever. And yet people don't seem happy about it. Everybody seems uncertain. And you go to a job site and you just, if you go to pick your construction project, and this isn't me ragging on the construction industry. I am the number one fan of the construction industry. It's just an observation. If you look around and you ask yourself, how does everybody look? What are their expressions? Are they well-rested? Are they happy? Are they skipping into work every day? Do they look healthy? What does that workforce look like? And then imagine you're standing amongst that workforce that odds are probably doesn't look well-rested, that probably doesn't look happy, that probably doesn't look healthy. And you're with a bunch of parents and nothing's organized. You just show up at a job site with a bunch of parents and you say, hey, everybody, this is the best place for your child. I promise. And yeah, I know appearances, it doesn't always look that great, but I swear this is the best place for your child. Are they going to believe me?
No,
probably not.
The visual is interesting because I've had friends who've grown up in the construction space, and generally it's about their shitty day at work that we talk to them about. And then I'm like, and I look at the calluses on their hands, I look at the bags under their eyes, and I'm like, these guys are overworked and underappreciated. And yet I will say, actually, they do make, like, some of them make $100,000 a year as, like, you know, mid, not even mid management, like just above the labor. And I'm like, there's something missing here where we're not treating this like a career. Like, a lot of people seem to treat this like a shitty job. Is that fair to say?
Well, and so that goes to my main point here is that everybody in construction is acting like this is an external problem. It's just happening to us. Oh, the next generation's entitled. Oh, colleges. Oh, everybody's lazy. This and that. Like, we can't do anything about it. Well, what if, maybe those things are true, but what if it's us that's the problem? And what choice do we have but to look in the mirror and ask ourselves, maybe I have something to do with this. And maybe I can do some better things here to make myself, my team, my company a better place to ensure that we can then attract the workforce we need. Like, as a business owner, my workforce is my responsibility. It's no one else's responsibility, regardless of market conditions. It's my responsibility. And so I've started to then think about this. It's like, well, who's more entitled here? Is it the next generation that wants a better lifestyle because they've been raised by their parents who have oftentimes said, don't do what I've done, or they've seen their parents do stuff that they want nothing to do with? Or is it the employers thinking they deserve the workforce because they offer a paycheck and they offer benefits that oftentimes aren't even that great? Well, to me, it's like, I think the industry is more entitled here. And I'm trying to explain this. Again, it's not this unfair criticism. It's just, one, what I've observed by going on more job sites than just about anybody over the past 5 years across the United States and around the world. It's an observation, but it empowers the industry to do something about it at the same time. It's not just this hopeless situation we're in. We've kind of got ourselves into this, and that means we can get ourselves out of it. We can challenge our beliefs. We can challenge the way things we've always, the way it's always been done. We can challenge how we came up, because maybe that's how we came up, but maybe it's not best for right now, and maybe that's okay. So, and this is the most important point here is, this is what the best contractors are doing. Mm-hmm. This is what those that are winning, that aren't really struggling for workforce right now, that are more and more profitable every year, that are more productive, that are building the best work out there, are doing. They're not playing the victim card. They're saying, cool, all right, world's changed. What do we got to do to change with it? And let's get on with it. Because this is way too important to mess around with and to whine about. This is like the fabric of society that we're dealing with here. It's way bigger than me. It's bigger than my company. It's bigger than my community. It's like the whole future of the country, of humanity, my children. It sounds dramatic, but it's like, how successful will your child be if they can't go to a house every night, if they can't flush the toilet, if they can't drive to work? And we take those things for granted, but no, it's hard work. It's hardworking companies and people that make that happen. And if they can't keep making that happen, society stops.
What are the things? So you look at the company you work with right now, let's say from maybe even a couple of years ago when you first started with them to today, what is the work that you're doing? If we were to break it down to a couple key areas that our listeners could take and be like, okay, these are the areas I have to be better. When it comes to brand, when it comes to recruitment, when it comes to training, like what are you really narrowed in on with your clients, and what is actually changing for them that's getting the results?
It's really simple stuff that's not all that common. Everybody knows it. I speak a lot, and I say, everybody, guys, I'm not here to tell you anything you don't already know. This is all very basic information, but again, I can tell you that I don't see it very often. Mm-hmm. One thing is that, again, they challenge the status quo. They ask themselves, what have we been doing that might have got us here, that no longer serves us, and let's stop doing those things. They take an extraordinary pride in the details. They have a great brand. Their job sites look very good. Everybody on the job site looks very good. Equipment looks very good. Materials are nice and tidy. Everything's clean. There's not a bunch of trash lying around. They take pride in those details. That is very common amongst those best-in-class companies. That's not that common across the industry. They have leaders that are present on the front line. It's those building the work that make it all happen. There's a bunch of people in the office, and sometimes the tail can wag the dog a little bit. The people in the office, the people leading the company, and it's not their fault. They get bogged down in all the nonsense that is lawyers and insurance and banking and all kinds of stuff like that. But they sometimes lose track of what actually is going on here and who drives the whole thing in the first place. It's the people out in the field. And they don't lose track of that, though, the best-in-class people. They're present with those out in the field. And I guess the final point is they actively tell their story. They get the word out about what it is they do and why they do it. Everybody's like, well, people don't understand what we do. It's like, yeah, yes. Have you told them what it is that we do? No. Well, then who's in charge of telling them? Like, if you're not going to tell them, you're kind of it. Like, no one's going to tell them. And here we are. We're in the situation we are for a reason, because we haven't told anybody that what it is that we do. So I would say they take pride in the details. They challenge the status quo. They have leaders that are very present out in the field with the front lines, those who are building the work. And losing my train of thought here.
Storytelling.
And they tell their story. Thank you.
Is it fair to say that why you're saying this isn't rocket science is because when you look at so many other companies in other industries, this is the standard. This is the norm. This is what you would expect to be if you were to be a successful company, is to be a conscious, group of leaders, to be, aware of what trends are happening in the market and be able to shift accordingly, to be able to make sure that you as a brand are communicating properly to your marketplace. But for whatever, I think the last 10 years, things have changed actually a lot for this industry. But 10 years prior to that, nobody cared, or what, it didn't matter for your ability to be successful as a contractor. And now it does. It's just about being professional. It's about having an actual care for this industry and where it's going and being on the front line of it versus just, like you said, complaining about it. Is that kind of what it is? It's like, we care about professionalizing this industry and we will move it beyond just the fact that it makes us money or not. This matters to this industry. We will be a part of that conversation.
Yeah, it's just basics. Like it's not that complicated here. It's just basics. The world has changed. This year, I think my biggest business lesson learned this year has been accepting reality for what it is. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. It doesn't matter what you think. None of that matters. Reality just is reality. And so we can sit here and argue all day long about what we think and, oh, the world's this and that, and, oh, it should be this and that. Or we can just ask ourselves, okay, how has the world changed and what do we need to do to change with it? And that's not bad. That's just called evolution. That's just called progress. That's just called what humanity's done for thousands of years. Like, we've always done it. That's how we got here. And we're not going to get further without changing, continuing to change. So it's, again, it's not bad. It's not better. It's not worse. It's just changing with how the world is changing accordingly. I like that the construction industry is a little slower to adopt some stuff, because there are industries that have run into some sticky situations because they're on the front end of the trends, and sometimes the trends don't prove to be correct with where society's at or where the world's at. We've seen a lot of that over the past year or two, especially. But then there's the side that hurts us dramatically as well. That's like contractors in 2025 still, social media. I don't know about that, man. It's like, hey, that ship has that, like, that horse is out of the barn, bro. You've got to get on board. If you want the next generation, that's where they are. I don't care how you feel about it. It just is what it is.
Is it the balance of like being real publicly in a way that actually is real, like genuine? Because I feel like this industry, we're a bit more salt of the earth. We're a bit more down to earth, and we don't want to be cheesy. And so we just say nothing, because we would rather just people figure it out on their own. And the minute you go out online and you start to make videos and do things, it's like, how do you do that in a genuine, real way?
I think, so one, I think it's often just fear-based. It's a very litigious world that we live in. Contractors are afraid. Lawyers, lawsuits, insurance, safety. You're bidding against each other all the time. It's hyper competitive. You're always focused on your competitors and what did they bid? What is their unit price? Whatever it is. And it's this scarcity mentality. I think contractors are always, they're just heads on a swivel, because that's the world they live in. That's the market they serve. It's just reality. But that mentality doesn't necessarily serve you everywhere. And so I think I run into that a lot. And then two, like you were, I think, alluding to the humility piece, is like, well, we don't want to go out on the internet and say how good we are. It's like, yeah, I don't expect you to. But you can like talk about what it is that you do and why you do it. Like in our world, okay, we're building a road. How do you build a road? I don't know. Like you move some dirt, you make some subgrade, you put some asphalt on the ground, you pour curb. Here's how we pour curb. Here's why we pour it this way. Like you can just be a reporter even. You can just factually state what you do and why you do it, because people don't understand what you do and why you do it. You can talk about your people and the great work that they do, because they should get more credit. You can talk about your customers, the end users. There's so many things you can talk about beyond just talking about you. It doesn't have to be about you. It shouldn't be about you. And so that's at least how I address that concern, is like, okay, you don't have to go on the LinkedIn and post a selfie every day. Like how many pictures of me on my LinkedIn profile? You know, I've got a fair following in the construction industry now. How many pictures of me are on there? Not very many, because I don't need to talk about me. I can go talk about others all day long.
You talk a lot about storytelling and the importance of it. Can you, you're getting into this right now, but can you guess, help us break down, like, what is good storytelling? What is bad storytelling? And what is the younger generation actually looking for when it comes to storytelling?
Bad storytelling in construction is everybody smiling, big smiles, clean vests and clean brand new gloves and a brand new hard hat and some blueprints and some pointing. Everything is
all the
polished.
Stock imagery out there on photo stock, right? Yeah.
Yes. But go to websites, you'll see a lot of it. That's probably still the standard in the construction industry. It sounds silly, but it is. And even go on, you know, these big construction companies, social media pages. Oh, it's all about the golf tournament. And we went to this meeting and our people are just so great and this and that. I mean, good for you. That's great. But again, that I pick on mining, because mining is, I think, one of the biggest culprits of this. It'll be somebody, it's a mining company. So say they mine, pick a commodity, copper. And the picture will be like, some people looking at some flowers, And it's like, okay, like maybe that's an important part of copper mining. Sure, the environment, but like, it can't be every photo. Like, what do you do? Show me the mining. Show me what actually happened. Like, how do you make money? It's a mining company. You extract resources from the earth that then go into essential products that everybody needs. Can we just talk about that? Can we say what it is that we do? And so I think poor storytelling is when you're trying to manufacture. Mm-hmm. Every time I try to plan a message, every time I try to think about what I'm going to say, every time I try to, you know, maneuver something, I've realized just getting further away from the truth. And people don't like that. We've been bamboozled for so long. I don't want nonsense. I don't want this manufactured storyline. And it doesn't work anymore. Because again, there's something called the internet. It doesn't work anymore. And so instead, just give me the story. And that's what I've focused on since the very beginning, is just listen. I don't need to stage anything. I don't need to script anything. I don't need to make anything up. Here is the construction industry. I just showed up on this project today, and here's what everybody was doing. And here's what it looks like. Here's why it's important. That's that. Like, it's not complicated. And oftentimes it's marketing people saying, no, 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 it needs to be more complicated. And it's like, get out of here. It does not need to be more complicated. I wouldn't generate nearly 1 billion views every year if it was complicated. I've done that just by, again, showing people what it takes to build the world and keep everything moving. That's it.
I've watched some of your stuff on YouTube. It's actually pretty incredible visuals too. I will say, like, there is some sweet stuff that happens that nobody ever gets to see that you get to go capture and show the world. And I think maybe we get used to it because that's where we work every day, or, you know, you work in the dirt world. So it's like, it's just a place to get my job done and get paid and move on. But if you can look at it for what it actually is, it's an incredible engineering feat that most of the world never has any access to seeing, that you've kind of uncovered and shown people. When you look at,
and that's, I mean, just to go on that point for a moment, like, that is something we as an industry falsely assume as well, is like, well, I build roads. Of course, everybody knows how to build a road. Like, it's like, yeah, okay, you've done it for 40 years. You know how to build a road, but like, people don't know how to build a road. Or in the residential space, people don't know how to build cabinets. Like, I don't know. They've never done it. You do it every day. It's obvious to you, but it's not obvious to 99.9% of people.
There's a saying in teaching or in just education in general that it's like, often it's what you forgot that everybody else needs to learn. And so when you spent so much time being so close to something, you think you need to make it so much more amazing because it's what would interest you. But the truth is, most of your audience would just be interested by the stuff you worked on 20 years ago and the basic stuff, because that's, they've never seen that before. And that connects the dots for their brain a lot easier than the more advanced, complicated things. What would be some good examples of this? Now, a lot of our listeners are in residential construction, some commercial painting, landscaping, you know, new home build, stuff like that. What are just some of the examples of this where you've seen a really great story told in the most organic, simple way? And it really would exemplify what we're talking about here.
I mean, like, my brain goes first is like, most of the best performing stuff I've ever shared is all shot on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So it very rarely is it like, we do a lot of produced stuff. We have a podcast. We do YouTube videos. I take professional photos. I've taken probably more professional photos in the dirt world than anybody over the past 10 years at this point. So can we make everything look pretty and polished? Sure. But that's, it has its place, but that's typically not what does best. And so the people that are, I think, having the most success, again, they're just showing what they do on a day-to-day basis without a lot of production quality, without a lot of drama. It's just like bad iPhone photos oftentimes, or like not even that great video with annoying audio. It's funny what does well. It's usually the stuff that's not even that well produced. And so if someone was trying to figure out what to do or where to start, I would just start with showing people what you do on a day-to-day basis. That's it. Just do it daily. Just a little bit every day. because I think that's what a lot of people don't understand with storytelling is that it's a skill. It's like, if you told me, go shoot this basketball at the 3-point line and make it, I'd be like, well, odds of that are happening are very low because I haven't practiced basketball. I don't have that skill. I don't do it. Storytelling is the same way. It's like, well, I'm bad at storytelling. It's like, yeah, you haven't done it. So of course you're bad at storytelling. That's how it works. It's not this magical skill. I wasn't bopped on the head by the storytelling fairy with the wand and, oh, now I know how to tell a story. It's like, no, I've told stories every day for years and years and years. And then what happens is when you're doing it every day is really important because then you start to train your brain to look for things happening, look for stories around you, look for compelling things to talk about. Again, you're starting to now notice the world around you and all the different storylines that are in everybody's life every day, but they've been passing you by because you haven't had that skill previously. So I just tell people, listen, if you're serious about it, and I tell people, most people this, they don't listen. They're not serious about it. But if you're serious about it, do a little bit every day, use your phone. It doesn't need to be a whole lot more complicated than that.
You're kind of letting the public get to know you, or letting that person that's looking into you get to know you over time and see you kind of frequently and understand. Actually, what you described too is kind of like pulling back the curtain a little bit. It's like not what's in front of the curtain, what looks nice on a website, but here's like behind the curtain what's going on every single day. And so when we do finally have a conversation, there's more of a relationship built in a very just like genuine way. You've been watching us build stuff on sites. You've been watching Frank and you got to know Mary and we're in the office and we're just doing us. And people are like, oh yeah, I know you guys. I feel like I've been watching you for a while. Versus that pre-produced like scripted story where it's like, great, that sounds like what I want to hear, but I don't trust any of that. It's like the trust is lost when it's too scripted, I guess you would say, or professionalized.
Is that okay? Yeah, because it's just not real and people know that. It's really easy to tell.
I think we all feel it.
It's really easy to tell who's using AI to do their writing right now. I don't have time for it. Like, it's just straight garbage. Authenticity is everything. It is scary, but I haven't seen it end up badly for anybody doing it well. I have friends doing it in residential construction and commercial construction as well. It's worked out very well for them. It's worked out very well for civil contractors, for big building contractors. It's the same principles apply no matter scale, size, area. It's all just good storytelling is good storytelling.
Let's talk about employer brand, specifically from the mind of a young contractor. So somebody who's, you know, maybe they've got 2 or 3 years in the industry, they're looking around at different employers. What are they drawn to? What are they not drawn to? How do we put out our brand in a way that makes sense? What do we need to work on that we're missing?
So presentation is pretty important. I do think you need to present yourself well. So it's not everything. There's a lot of people, and people listening to this can probably attest to these guys spending a bunch of money on a nice website and nice trucks and this fancy wrap and the trailer that looks all good and everybody looks super cool and big watch, whatever it is. Like, that doesn't always translate, but there is a level of professionalism that does translate. And so I've always, just speaking personally, like, I've gone to work for contractors that they just look good. Like, their company trucks are pretty cool looking. I went to a company that was the only factor in my decision-making was that I was driving by their job site every day on the way to work with another construction company, and their trucks and their equipment and everything, it had their brand on it and it looked cool. I wanted to look cool. I wanted to be a part of that. So it is a part of it. Now, you also have to back it up. Like, it has to be real every day. And that's where culture and authenticity and values come into play. So you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig at the end of the day. And maybe you can fool people to get them in the door, but they're going to find out real quick if you mean it or not, if you are legitimately detail oriented or not. If you do walk the talk, it's pretty straightforward. And so I think the best in class contractors, they look good, but they're really focused on being good across the board. They know if they do perform well, if they do invest in their people, if they do enforce very basic standards of excellence, if they do drive people that aren't excellent out of their organizations, if they are very serious about who they hire, it starts to become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and they become better and better with who they can attract and why.
And as you're speaking, you're almost skipping something in my mind that I think is what you're saying is like, you're defining your brand personality. You're saying, this is who we are. This is who we're not actually. And this is what we believe in. And this is why we believe in those things. And this is what we want to go do every single day. And this is how it looks. You know, when I think about even like Breakthrough Academy behind the brand of Contract Revolution, like there is a statement that when we built our brand package out, stayed with me for the last 10 years. And it's been, we are professionally untucked. And I'm like, that is exactly what we are. Because yeah, there's a level of professionalism required to do what we do every single day. But I don't want to wear a suit and tie every day. That's not who I am as a consultant, as a director of business operations for construction. I'm a dude. I'm me. And I want to be able to bring that untucked piece. But if it's all that, well, I've also got to like work on the business and, you know, lead the way. So I need to be somewhat professional. It's like, I remember our brand person that helped us with this. They're like, Danny, your guys are professionally untucked. And I was like, that is totally us. And though the way we hire, the way we look for people, the way we look, it's like we're professionally untucked. And now that leads the way in everything that we present to the marketplace.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. You defined who you are and then you've stuck with it. Defining who you are, I think, is the easier part. The sticking with it's the harder part. Mm-hmm. I've noticed most businesses don't, because it's hard to enforce a standard. Those are the really hard decisions you have to make. Sometimes it's a top performer even that's just not meeting the standard that you've got to get rid of, because the standard is the standard. No one's above it. That's what a lot of people aren't willing to do. Or tenure is very important. You know, loyalty is everything. And this person's been with me for so long. And it's just how it is. It's like, well, yeah, but they're going to do more harm than good to the overall team and organization and culture if they stick around a whole lot longer. But that's where the rubber meets the road. You know who's serious or not just based on interacting with their people. Like, my hope is that somebody doesn't need to interact with me at the company to understand what we're after. They can get a certain level of feel for the business, of interaction with the business and brand from anybody here, because again, we've defined what we're looking for and why. Now, are we perfect at that? Absolutely not. We've screwed that up 7 ways to Sunday, but we are striving to be that, to be what we've put on the wall, what we've defined. And it is a great feeling to get, like, my favorite compliments about business are people talking about the interactions they've had with people within our business. Mm-hmm. That's by far my favorite thing about business, is when they've had such a great interaction with somebody who's represented our brand so well that they have to come to me and tell me about it. There's nothing better.
That's how you create true replication and scale over time. Because if it's always just you holding the brand standards, it's not actually a business. It's just you, again, just like doing the work. It's like you holding up all the pieces.
It starts with you. You can't outrun it. Yeah. And so if you don't do it, good luck. Good luck. It doesn't work.
When you tell the story of just like you have to get rid of that person, I just can think about everybody listening right now. I see it often actually with like a project manager or someone who's in the leadership position who's been around for 20 years, who holds that position because they've been around for so long. And the interesting thing is they're so good at executing on projects and they piss everybody off in the process. And again, I've got friends, you know, that work in a lot of these construction companies who have had to leave multiple times because of the stress level that they've been under. And it's mostly due to this project manager who's stuck in their way, is constantly yelling at them and making them feel like shit. And they're losing, the company's losing good humans as a result of this. But they won't fire that guy because he's like the keys to the kingdom. He's like, I know all the things, and the company hasn't processed itself well enough to be independent of me. And they become reliant on it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just calling out those listening, but if you've got that, what we're talking about is like, prepare to remove that cancer from your organization if you expect any of what we're talking about to actually come to fruition. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, and you don't have to, but there's going to be contractors that will trounce you over time, mm-hmm. that are willing to. It's just how it works. And again, that model has worked for a very long time. Great. But you see it all the time now. There's this huge generational shift going on. Even with companies selling right now, just no succession plan, shutting down, liquidating everything, selling to other brands. I know in the home world, private equity has been this pretty scary trend lately. And not even lately, it's been happening for quite a while. They've just not been as vocal about it until more recently. I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if all that going away is necessarily good, but it's creative destruction at work. It's those that are willing to adapt. I think the long-standing companies that are willing to adapt are going to be the best positioned because they do have the resume, they have the balance sheet, they have the experience to then capitalize on their position in this changing market. But then you have all these upstarts as well that are like these younger people that are like, well, I'm not bound by convention here. I can do whatever I want. And I'm a nimble little speedboat and I can zip around this way and zip around that way. And I can just go right past you. And that I see is happening all the time too.
I'm watching the same thing. And actually, it's interesting you say I'm conflicted by it because I've watched private equity come into our space pretty aggressively. And I see the pros. I also see the cons. And I have a bit of a question mark around like my actual opinion around it. I'm not defined as like, I love it or I hate it. I don't know. Do you have an opinion on it? Anything you want to speak to on it?
I'm not the biggest fan because in civil construction, I'm not going to speak about home building. I'm not going to act like I understand residential, but it's starting to happen a little bit in civil construction. My opinion is, does that firm really... What's their number one priority? Is their priority the quality of infrastructure in America and the well-being of the people building the infrastructure? Or is the priority X return investment in X years? The priority is X return investment in X years. They're upfront about it. It's just like, this is our business. This is how it works. And that's great. Like, good for them. Okay, congratulations. You go make money. But building stuff's not a world in which we should play with just generating returns, because then we get worse infrastructure for more money, which then degrades society, which then degrades countries, which then degrades like the whole future. And to me, that's not something we should be playing with or can afford to play with. So that's why it makes me pretty uneasy.
You're talking about something, I think I call it like Walmartizing the industry. Like, you think about when me and you grew up, I remember when there was corner stores and mom and pop shop grocery stores, and it's all gone now. And Walmart is the word I'm using, but it's like everything has become Walmartized, which to the consumer is like a cheaper, faster way to gain a result. But for products and food and clothing and things that we buy every day, the quality is not there anymore. We just buy the cheapest thing, the fastest price, and like value is, or not value, our ability to have something that's not just a big, huge, faceless corporation is almost gone when it comes to going and shopping.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at infrastructure in the United States or Canada, it's not great.
Yeah.
I'm not impressed. I it's actually pretty terrible in most places. And the more I travel abroad, the more upset I am, because it's like, why don't we have the best infrastructure in the world here on this continent in North America? We have every thing we need to make it happen, but it's just not that way. It's just not a priority. I go to, you can go down the list of every country I've been to this year. It's better than, and then I come back to something that's just so subpar. And it's frightening to me, because infrastructure, again, is like, it's like a leading indicator. If you're investing in infrastructure, if you have good infrastructure, if you have people buying homes, so on and so forth, able to afford homes, families able to grow, et cetera, you have a growing, healthy society. If you have decaying infrastructure, if you have more expensive infrastructure that's delivering far less than ever before, if you have families unable to afford homes or whatever it is, own homes, I can't go buy a house right now. Are you kidding me? I'm 30. Like, I can't even think about it. that's not good. That doesn't mean we're headed somewhere in a positive way. And I think we can do something about it. Maybe it's a little too optimistic, but I'm at least trying.
Capitalism has gone too far. This is what I would say. We've gotten too far into too many nooks and crannies, and everything is now an opportunity to be more profitable. And that happened in the housing industry. Like, if you just look at why you can't buy a home, it's because a home became an asset, not just a place to live. And that, for the last 20 years, has driven prices up to an astronomical level. And now BlackRock buys all the homes in North America, and we have a personal living problem because you can't afford to live. You're competing with freaking BlackRock.
No, it's you're competing with these faceless corporations that pay cash for everything. It's like, well, I can't pay cash for this house. Are you kidding me? I don't think it's necessarily capitalism always. I think it is the drive for more and more and more, but it's everything has just mutated so far. There's this regulatory capture. There's like the whole game's been rigged. In a way, like in favor of a few companies making a bunch of money. And so it's just so rigged that I go to infrastructure. I can't talk about home building as much. Infrastructure. So we in the United States, they just passed a $1 trillion spending infrastructure bill a few years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I think 2021, maybe $1 trillion. We built the United States interstate system between the 50s and 60s for an inflation adjusted about $500 billion. So we just passed an infrastructure bill that was twice what the United States interstate system was. One of the finest achievements in infrastructure, and largely is what has created the modern United States as we know it, in the modern economy, because it allowed us to move goods and services around a lot easier beyond just rail and ships. So you would expect $1 trillion to like dramatically change the quality of life in America. Mm-hmm. And we're quite a few years in at this point. So like there should be something happening. Well, what's happening?
Nothing.
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
It actually seems like infrastructure is getting worse.
I don't know. I don't know where that money is going. I don't know what we're getting for it. I go to, again, a lot of different cities. I'll be in 10 states this next month. I don't see it. So maybe it's somewhere. Maybe they're building this incredible city somewhere that's really going to serve society and further a country. I just don't see it. And to me, it's like something's wrong here. There's something wrong. I don't know what exactly it is, but this isn't sustainable what's happening.
Well, Aaron, I mean, to be frank, I think... And I don't know either, but I think my opinion anyways on this is that there is more money at the top than there has ever been. And the degradation of the middle class is happening right before our eyes. And there are those who own the machine and those who are subject to it. And, you know, this podcast has gotten way off from what we started, but I think there's a conversation in this, which is, I think the middle class is being very intentionally rooted out and there is money to the top and everybody else. You can comment on this if you want.
I think that's it. Like, and I would argue there's not really a middle class anymore.
Yeah.
And if you look at infrastructure spending, it's like the lawyers get their money, the law firms, the engineering firms get their money, the insurance companies get their money, the equipment manufacturers get their money, the materials companies get their money. All of the industries that are very consolidated with clear winners and losers that are captured by regulations. And then you've got the contractor at the bottom. Hopefully they make money. They probably won't. At best, they'll make a few percentage points, enough to continue and enough to go bid and build the next job, but not enough to actually invest in their middle-class workforce and not really enough to pay people better. Like pay in the United States in the construction industry, wages are up 20% over the past 5 years. Buying power is down 1%. So the people building the work, there's more money being thrown around in the construction industry than ever right now. Mm-hmm. And you'd think that, well, the people building the work should be seeing some of that, and they are. But financially speaking, they're worse off than they are today. They're worse off than they were 5 years ago.
Yeah, the cost of living has gone up dramatically compared to what my raise or increase has gone. Let's talk about this from the perspective of those who have been in the industry for many years. Let's say they're 50, 60 years old at this point. what is their responsibility to do this properly? And for the younger generation too, what is, you know, I'm 38, you're 30. There's someone probably listening who's 25. What's our responsibility?
The previous generation, we need them to hand everything down mm-hmm. before they're out. Like, I hope their goal is to leave the industry in a better place than they found it, or at least try to, at least like teach people around them, at least just give, like pull everything out of their head and at least throw it somewhere, leave it here. Because if they run off and go retire, and I get it, they've earned it, they're exhausted, they want to go retire. But if they go run off and take it with them, it's gone forever. It's gone. I need to learn from those old timers. You need to learn from those old timers. We need those people passing down everything that they have, oftentimes putting pride aside and acknowledging, hey, this generation coming up, a little bit different than my generation, but my generation, a little bit different from my dad's generation, my mom's generation. And so is like the evolution of humanity, around and around we go. But we need those people to give. They have so much knowledge. They know so much, but it's not written anywhere. It's not in textbooks. It's not in courses, in university. It's up to these people to hand it down. Again, if they take it, it's gone forever. For the up and coming generation, you've got to meet in the middle. You know, if you want the previous generation to meet you there, you've also got to set your ego aside as well. I have to set my ego aside and acknowledge, hey, wait a minute. I don't really know what I'm doing here. I don't know the best way to do something. That's okay. Maybe I should just ask. Maybe I should just try to pull it out of these guys' heads. Maybe this guy, he's not at all friendly and he's not willing to teach me and he bites my head off every time I ask. However, I can just watch him and I can still try to be his friend and I can still try to make his life easier. I can still meet him in the middle. I can't control him, but I can still learn from him and I can still take some lessons from him and apply it to what I do. And so I think it's, you know, each generation, just we just have to come to the table from different perspectives. I think the previous generation, they've got to hand stuff down, and then the up and coming generation, they have to be willing to accept those hand downs and be open to those hand downs and have the humility, have the work ethic, have the ability to listen and actually accept those gifts, because a lot of it is tribal knowledge. And most everything that we do, like, it's done that way for a reason. There's not a lot of better ways to build something nowadays. It's kind of like, hey, a road's built this way for a reason, because we've tried it the other 10 ways and it doesn't work that way. So this isn't by accident, and here's why.
When I was coming up in my 20s, I was mostly in the painting space, but I remember these words in my head I had to repeat all the time, which was, Danny, just stay humble and work hard. Stay humble and work hard. Just stay humble and work hard. And it's hard to do both often along the way. But I do think it's the reason that I got through so much at a young age, because I learned so much just by staying humble and continuing to work hard. So if there's any young people listening, I mean, that's kind of what you've been saying the last little bit for the younger generation. It's just like, if those words mean something to you, I encourage you to listen and do that. It'll make you stand out from 90% of the young people out there. They don't want to stay humble and they don't want to work hard. If you can do those two things, you will stand out like a sore thumb in all the best ways. For the older generation, I'm not old enough probably to give like really confident advice, but I think what you're saying is like, be willing to give back and intrinsic value in that, because it can't just be about cashing out and making the biggest bang for your buck, you know, from a private equity firm, because you're going to leave a lot of learning behind that needs to be transferred down, and it's the right thing to do. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, nothing is sadder to me than seeing these guys just leave the industry. And they just go. And it's like, I don't blame you. Good for you. Like, you've worked so hard to make that happen. But then, like, but again, it's just gone. Like, wait a minute. What's the point then? Like, what's the point? I don't know. Isn't it to build a next generation, to leave everything better off than you found it? And sure, you built this great business and you've built all this great infrastructure, but you better tee it up to be great for a very long time as well. And these guys have a lot of that knowledge that's necessary to make it great. And especially for the young guys, like, I can speak on that part because I've been there. It's, yeah, just keep your mouth shut and show up on time. It's it's not that complicated.
Yeah. And I'm sure you do this too. I always talk to people older than me to understand the lessons that I could probably learn because I'm too blind to like know them, right? You'll never really know until you see other people do it. And it's hard even then to buy in. But they do talk a lot around once they retire, losing meaning. And meaning becomes more meaningful if you can just help others and transfer that, you know, what you've learned in your life down to somebody younger. And I've got a few people that build into me that I respect the hell out of that are basically like, look, Danny, I don't do this for anything more than the fact that I get something out of just knowing I can build into you. And I think having that mentality for young people, it's fulfilling. I think you do get a lot of fulfillment. And without it, I think people lose their meaning, especially entrepreneurs. We all work so hard on what we do every day just to like be done with it and retire. I think you'll get depressed. I think you need,
especially anybody in construction, like show me somebody that's just like so over the moon that they've retired and they just sit around all day now. Like I've watched somebody in my life, they've retired. They retired early. They had a great career and it's just been a slow decline since. And it is the most, one of the most tragic things I've personally witnessed. It's the saddest thing because those should be their best years. They have all that life experience. They have so much to give. And yet because they just called it quits, it's just been this nonstop decline. And so I don't say like give back for even the next generation. It starts with them. Like, I think it's in their best interest to give back. Like the guys that I know that have gone to the grave, the happiest and the most fulfilled are the ones that are still working in the very last days. Like they're still pouring in to something that is bigger than them. They're still pouring into other people. When that stops, it's over. It's over. And sometimes it's over. And then there's just a decade of nothingness before it's really over. But we're not going to succeed if that happens. If like we need these old guys to give back. We need these guys to give what they have, or else we're not going to make it.
Aaron, you've been a great advocate for this industry. It's been cool actually just like preparing for you and just seeing how you speak to this industry. It's we need more young people. Well, like you, like me in this, doing this, because there's a lot of big shoes to fill. And like you said, it's not slowing down. Any final message for everyone listening?
No, I appreciate you having me on. I think if anything, we've all got our part. There's not a next generation if everybody doesn't do something here. Mm-hmm. And so I think everybody has an obligation to make the industry better than they found it, regardless of how they feel about it. We've got to put our pride aside and say, listen, this industry, it has to be strong if there is to be a future. And everybody here has a role to play in it. Big, small, there's a role to play for everybody.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about this today. I'll be back on to talk about it. But like with the role of AI in what will become the replacement of many jobs, I feel like this industry will be one of the last remaining places to work and have a pretty like meaningful job. And I think for that reason, even on top of that, like we need to protect what we have here. And I don't think we do. I don't think we do fast. So anyway, it's good. If people want to follow you, if they want to find you, how do they reach out?
It's just my name everywhere. Aaron, Aaron Witt, Witt, and you'll find me.
Awesome, Aaron. Okay. Thank you for your time. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.